Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the 1973 podcast with somebody that I've been waiting to get on. First American-born player to score 50 goals in the National Hockey League. I want to say the guy that was a trailblazer for USA Hockey for kids and where it is now. NHL alumni Bobby Carpenter. Bobby, happy to have you on. We've been waiting for a while. We've been in and out and. Now you're here, so we're going to have some fun with this.
Thanks.
So take us back to how it all started as a kid and how was it with youth hockey growing up and how did it all start for you?
Well, I think we were all, my generation was all part of the Bobby Orr era for sure. I was born in 63, 68, 70, 72, all when the Bruins were, it really took off. I don't know the exact numbers, but in those 5 or 6 years, we went from 15 rinks or 10 rinks to 30 rinks, and it just took right off. We all played. We all played.
So, as far as like the start with USA Hockey and how you got involved with that and being on the cover of Sports Illustrated, that must have been something special.
So, just to bridge that gap, we, like I said, all we did was play in the ponds. We played in backyard rinks. We just skated. We got the neighborhood kids together and skated, and then in advance to play for your town team, like you guys were talking about. And then it was interesting. Then the first of the Triple A started, probably in the, I would guess 73, 74. The South Shore Kings are one of the first. Middlesex Islanders are one of the first. The Raiders came around, which was in our area, so we had joined the Raiders. It's interesting because you talk about the jealous parents and all the stuff, and our Peabody Youth Hockey wouldn't allow us to play for both. They said you got to make a choice. You have to either play for us or them. And so, like, well, obviously, this is better hockey. And I think we only had four teams in the league, so we played each other like 15 times a year. That's how it started. That's when you started to get good and get moving on and get junior high, and then we go to high school. And I guess the first big year was when we had won 79 with St. John's. I think that's when it really started to take off.
So, as far as being 18 and getting drafted into the NHL and playing at 18, was it like a culture shock like at first? Like did were you in awe of players that you watched growing up or what was it like?
Well, again, another bridge to gap. It started a little earlier than that. So we win. Next year, we lose in the finals. But the next year was interesting because that was the year I made that the junior team tournament that you see over Christmas team, Christmas time. So we had went to, and there was talk about me being drafted in the second round, the third round, and all the different scenarios. We're in Germany, and it was interesting because Canada at the time, they didn't send their whole team. They sent the Memorial Cup winner went representative. It really just started, maybe 10 years before. So the World Juniors wasn't that big a deal as it is today. So when all the scouts were looking at me and talking and thinking, they didn't really know where to gauge me because we never played against any of those teams or against any of those players. Well, Dale Hawerchuk was the number one player, and he was going to be the number one draft, and we were going to meet in this tournament. So it was a big tournament for a gauge, and it was interesting. We ended up beating them. I think we beat them like 7-4. I think they had like 5 points. So in a matter of one game, I go from second to third round to the top five. Now they're like, okay, they have a gauge. But the funny thing about the game was, so we had Lou Vero, who was the coach. He had coached the Olympic teams, a couple Olympic teams. He coached the Rangers for a while. And I was really young, like extremely young. I was, I was 16 or 17. We only had two other players that were in high school. Everybody else was either freshman or sophomores in college. So grew up playing with Andy Brickley and everything. And Lou Vero was a real disciplinarian. And so I kind of knew it was a big game, but I just wanted to play. I didn't really say, oh, I got to do good against this guy, because I really didn't know. I was so young, and my father had kept me level-headed. So he was a disciplinarian for bad penalties. If you took a dumb penalty, you always sat out a period. So we're playing Canada and Germany, and where it's 1-1, we'll lose it 2-1, I think it was. We'll lose it 2-1, and it's like 2.5 minutes left, and somebody from Canada did something, and I either punched them or whacked them, and I ended up getting a penalty. So there's 2:30. So Andy Brickley come across the ice, and he says, and he's laughing. He says, "Guess what? Lou says you're gonna sit out the next period." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, screw him." I'm like, "No way." So he says, "You got to go right to the bench." So when the penalty ended, they killed the penalty. I went right on the ice, and I could hear him screaming. And I ended up scoring, tie the game to make it 2-2. And Lou pulled me in the office and just reamed me, "You have no discipline in this." And I'm like, "Lou, I'm just here to play." And we ended up beating him 7-4. Like I said, I had like 5 points. And that was where it started to go really, really big, really.
So, draft day. Tell me about draft day, how that experience went.
Well, it's different today. So draft day, well, then, so then now the Sports Illustrated comes even before that. It comes in February. Draft isn't until June. The interesting about this, the Sports Illustrated, so I was basically supposed to, when it first started, it was supposed to be a little bit more than the faces in the crowd that they have, maybe a page. And they come, I talked to E.M. Swift. He came to the house, we talked, and then he calls and says they're not going to do it. They pushed it back a week. That's when the Boston College basketball scandal hit, and they needed the extra pages. So I got bumped. I'm like, "Go away. We gotta write the story." And the next week after that, nothing happened. Zero. There was zero, nothing in sports. I think Dale Earnhardt went up winning his 15th race. There was nothing that went on. And then, like, well, maybe we'll do a little bit more about the story. So E.M. Swift comes back out and he writes some more. And they're like, "Okay, we're going to shoot a cover. We're going to try to see what happens." And again, nothing happened for the rest. And next thing you know, I'm on the cover. So I actually got bumped before I actually got on there.
So in my house, that Sports Illustrated was on a subscription. So
Yes.
when it came in the mail for me, I used to look at it, and if there was hockey on the cover, because I was such a hockey fan as a kid, before my dad would throw it out at, after the new one came in or whatever, I would rip the page off the front. So I had in a section of my room, I had all these Sports Illustrated covers that were just hockey based. I had like the 1980 one, the one with Jim Craig on it with the Atlanta Flames, yours. So that, I can relate as a kid. So we were all born in 73, so I'm 10 years younger. So I'm right in that wheelhouse of, having these heroes and collecting hockey cards and all that stuff. So that Sports Illustrated for me in my house resonated, almost like a because hockey memorabilia and posters and things like that hadn't really come out yet. So
Right.
those were things that if you were a kid, you gravitated towards because it was so rare that even Sports Illustrated would put hockey on the cover. So that it to me it's personally it's an iconic cover. So
I
Tom, do you have
still sign. I so we have we're in development, so we have a mail room. I'll sign cards every day, and at least 2-3 times a week, I'll get a cover on in the mail. And even the autograph shows that I do, but I always look where the people come from. I mean, I've got them all over. Hawaii, Alaska, everywhere where they've been mailed. It's pretty cool to look at where they come from.
Yeah, and it's very, I think hockey is very popular now, especially after the playoffs, and I think it has grown, but I think there is a lost nostalgia for people that don't know the history of hockey, or now with the Four Nations, how much of a light it sheds on USA hockey, and they talk about the 96 World Championship with all the guys that were on it that were in the NHL at the time. These are iconic things that when they bring them up, to me, I take them for granted. But there's a whole hockey niche out there that doesn't know any of the older players. That's what I like about the platform with the podcast, that we can have the chance to sit down and talk to some of these guys and
Right.
tell slapshot type stories. I mean, the road stories and funny stuff and players and all that, the banter that goes with it. But Tom, you got a question for Bobby?
Sure. After you made the cover of Sports Illustrated, did you feel that there was more pressure put on you because you made the cover?
I never felt any pressure at all. I didn't. My team, my parents, my brother, sister, my coaches, there was no pressure. We still never, they never told me where I was going or what was going to happen. It just wanted to play again, the next level, the next level, the next level. The draft didn't matter to me. I didn't care where he went, where I was going to play. Because at that time, I think that going from high school to the NHL was not an option at the draft. It was to go to school. So it was just okay. The next step's college. I picked Providence. I'm going to go to Providence, and then we'll see what happens for there. Yeah, I never felt any pressure whatsoever. Even when I started to play, I didn't. I was deaf to the people and the critics and the positive people. Deaf to everybody. All I just wanted to do was play. I just want to play. But getting back to the Four Nations term and all that, I still like. People always ask me, "You watch it? You watch it?" I says, if there is not a Team Russia in there, the champion should have an asterisk for me. Like, it's just not worth watching. They're the best to watch. They create stuff. They cause stuff. It's not there for me without having the best in the world in there.
Yeah, we talked about that on the podcast, that I can't wait for the Olympics when you
I know.
look at that list of guys that's going to be on that Russian roster. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Ed, got a question for Bobby?
Oh, Bobby, what was your favorite building to play in?
Chicago or Boston? I like the small rinks. I did well in Buffalo. I think I averaged a goal a game in Chicago. For some reason, I love those small rinks. I think I was so quick. I had good vision that it was very conducive to the way I played. I loved all the small ones for sure.
Bobby, that 50 goal season, you gotta shed some light on that, because that was an epic thing. I can remember, even I was hoping that when the next set of Top Scots came out the next year, that they would have a special insert of that, because I was just waiting for some kind of memorabilia at the time that have a moment of that, but they never Tops never came through.
So the third year of the contract, I had got hurt. I got 32, 32, and I had got hurt. I separated my shoulder. There was talk about the surgery and no surgery, surgery, no surgery. So it was so new back. The surgery back then was 8 to 10 months. It was a partial torn rotator cuff. So we decided to. So that year, I got hurt. I got hurt in the beginning of the third year. Played the whole year, ended up slipping a little bit, got 28 goals, and that was my option year. And Washington was like, "Well, you slip, we're not going to give you the money, give you this, give you that. You got to play out your option." And I'm like, "That's fine, we'll play out the option, no big deal whatsoever." So that summer, rather than have the surgery, I rehabbed it, and we had a great team, surrounded myself with good people. And the best part about that was I got a jump start on everybody, because that was the Canada Cup year. We had Badger Bob Johnson as a coach. Like, they used me every positive way, every great way. We ended up making it to the semifinals. Sweden ended up beating us. Came home, got some rest, and then that next year took off with the goals. But the interesting about the goals was, it wasn't like I was getting all these goals, getting all these goals, getting all these goals. That whole year, I got 53 goals, without a hat trick or without an empty net. I scored almost every other game or every other game. It was very slow. It just kind of snuck up on everybody, and then it happened. I think it was 11 games left that I ended up getting my 50th goal. But it wasn't like, oh, I got a great stat. He's got 20 goals in 20 games. It was just nobody really paid attention to it. It was just, like I said, there was no hat tricks, no empty net goals, and just was snuck up. And then someone says, oh, wow, he's got 50 goals. We had a really good team. I had really good line mates. Mike Gartner was awesome. Gaétan Deschênes was really, we had a great line. We had a checker, had another goal scorer, had a right-handed winger to pass through. It was just a great line to play on.
Yeah, that Capitals team, for people that don't know, they you look back at that roster and there were some good players on that team that kind
Oh,
of
we were really good. We were really good. So
Tom,
that year we ended up losing to the Islanders. We had a really, I don't know, we lost in the, I don't know, Rangers or Islanders, I'm not sure. But then the next year, I think they didn't have the President's Trophy, but I think we had actually beat Edmonton, or we were right there, first or second. But that year, 86, if I believe, everybody lost. Calgary lost, Edmonton lost, we lost, everybody lost, the Bruins lost, Philadelphia lost, everybody lost in the first round, and Montreal walked through, and they ended up winning. They were like the 15th or 16th seed, and they ended
Yeah.
up winning. We all
With
lost that first round.
yeah, and that Canadiens team was the Roy rookie year. They
Yes.
came out of nowhere.
Claude Lemieux and Stéphane Richer rookies too.
Yeah. Yeah. I missed that era of hockey. I could talk about it forever.
It is a different game. There's no question.
Oh yes. Tom, question for Bobby.
Yeah, I've asked everyone we've interviewed this question. I'm interested to see what you have to say. What was your aha moment or your welcome to the NHL moment. Did you have one?
Well, so my first year, we didn't have a regular training camp. We went to Europe. We went with the Rangers. I guess the first one was, it's actually kind of funny. It's pretty wild. So we went to Europe with the Rangers. We went to Finland and Sweden and we played. So we didn't have a camp, a training camp, so to speak. We just picked the team and then we went. But I'll never forget it the first time ever. So I was always a quick changer at the beginning. I would take my stuff off because I, just was sweating so much. I just want to get there. I would sit there after. But in this one rink in Sweden or Finland or whatever, we had neutral showers and went in, and Bobby Hull was in there. He was on a tryout with the Rangers. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I thought he retired 5 years ago. And here he is, this little guy with muscles all over the place. I'm like, I can't believe I'm showering with Bobby Hull. As playing wise, so we come back and now we got a couple extra games, and obviously the Washington Philadelphia battle was unbelievable. So we got in a bunch of brawls with Philadelphia, and again, it was an honest type of brawl. Big guys went with the big guys, medium guys went with the medium guys, and I ended up getting hooked up with Kenny Linsman, and they kept saying how tough he was and this, that, and the other thing, and I did really good against him. I'm like, all right. I know I'm not going to go to that next level up there, but I'm comfortable where I'm at right now. I can handle myself here with this.
Do you chirp him when you see him?
Oh, he was my roommate when we played in Boston. We laughed about it, laughed about it. I still see him all the time. He's became a really good friend. Kenny's awesome.
Ed, you got a question for Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby, I'm gonna kind of circle back to the 50 goal season. Do you feel
Yeah.
like the kind of game slowed down for you at that point, to score those goals? Because I mean that's some serious, puck in the net.
Like I said, it wasn't anything that jumped. I don't think I ever won player of the week the whole year. It was just a goal here, two there, none, one, one, none, one, two. No, I mean, I think at Christmas time I probably only had like 27. Everything was halfway. There was never a thought till like maybe I don't know, February. So in February, we go to Winnipeg. I guess the start of it was in February, we're in Winnipeg, which is ironic. Davey Christian had the American scoring record of 42. In Winnipeg, with Davey on the ice, I actually got 42 and 43. So now, I'm only seven away. We got March to go. And then, so like I said, it was never a topic for me or the team or really the press or, I mean, today's world, you get three goals in two games. I think you're going to get 85. It's not a base rating five. We didn't have that back then. It was just what you did, what they wrote. They didn't want all the press to go crazy with it. We didn't have that. We just had really press people.
I think the conspiracy to keep the US-born players down with Gretzky in the league at the time and Mike Bossy, I think it deserved more tout than what it got, to tell you the truth.
Well, there was only, it wasn't an American Canadian thing. There were some Canadian players, minimal. Nobody really cared. You were teammates. No, it wasn't like it was in the 70s or 60s where I hear some of these guys, I was better, so much better than those players, but I got cut because I wasn't Canadian. We didn't have that. It really started to become a big business and the best players played. Did we rag on each other about being US and Canada? Yeah, but there was never any meaning to it. It was just fun. But yeah, there were a couple of players that, fly, like Pat Riggin, the goalie. Oh, you college guy. And I said, well, I didn't even go to college. If you're going to yell at me about what I did, Pat, make sure you get the story straight. College, I get this, I didn't go to college, right? So I'm not in that group. But, and again, he didn't really mean it. It was a lot of poking. I would say that the problems, if there were problems, were with coaches, not players, with coaches and stuff. Oh, you only played high school. You don't know how to play. I'm gonna teach you how to play. And I'm like, I'm doing pretty good. I'm here, so let me just play. I think it would have been coaches that had an issue with American players, not players.
So I'm going to name a couple names and you tell me what your experience with these people.
Sure.
Ray Bourque, Scott Stevens, Mario Lemieux.
So, that's a good question. Ray, so Scotty's still one of my closest friends. So when you go through the NHL, you play with hundreds and hundreds of people. You walk away with three friends. They're all acquaintances. You see each other 5 years later, you go out for a beer like nothing happened. That's fine, but they're acquaintances. Scotty Stevens, right, in each other's weddings, and we still talk constantly. Ray, I mean, just to see Ray do what he did, to be able to play with him and see what a leader he was awesome. It was great. He actually lived across the street from me. So me, Glenn Wesley, and him would drive every day to practice and to the games and everything. So I know Ray extremely well. The interesting thing with Mario was, he they had Gretzky, Mario, Gretzky, Mario, Gretzky, Mario, right? Mario was the most skilled national goal scorer, with the exception of Bossy, ever. You looked at the goal percentage per games with Mario and Gretz, it's not even close. It's not even close. Mario was so skilled, he was so big and so strong and so lanky, that when I played with him, when I was against him when I was younger, I never really played against him because the checkers checked him and I did my job, I scored, he scored that. But when I got older and ended up going to New Jersey and in the playoffs, having to play against the checker, I ended up becoming really good at that role. And Mario was so smart with the way he plays. All right, I'm not even gonna worry about 5-on-5. Like, this guy is good, he's gonna be all over me. I'll wait. They got four power plays, he got 4 points. He was happy. He was really smart. But Gretz, I was his roommate in LA. He was incredible how he saw the ice at a faster pace. Mario would slow it down a little bit and use the system and the power plays and everything to the everything that he could. They're different players. They're different players, even though you want to talk about points, but they were different players. Gretz played a faster game, had the puck more than Mario. Mario would be on the ice. He'd be on the ice for a minute and a half, not touch it, grab it, boom, it's in and out again, assist. Gretz always had the puck. He always wanted the puck. They were different players, but two of the best.
It's fantastic that you had played with all these legit Hall of Fame guys, and had you played in an era where all these legendary players played. Tom,
Oh,
question for Bobby?
so many of them. It was so good. Like Jari Kurri, a lot of guys, those guys from the Edmonton team. Like Messier is extremely underrated behind all those players that were there. I mean, he was a massive, massive man. Like, and he was mean too. Like, he was somebody we weren't really worried about Mario doing anything bad or aggressive, but if you did something wrong, the ambassador, he looked at you and was like, ah, shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. He was a massive, mean guy.
He was a throwback, definitely throwback.
He was awesome to play against.
Tom?
Yeah, with all the legends you've played with, what teammate had the biggest impact on you?
Biggest impact as a teammate. Again, Scotty Stevens was somebody I grew up with. He was a year behind me in the draft. We were roomed together, we lived together, we spent so much time together. We talked so much about the game. He's probably, like I said, the closest friend. He was dedicated as I was, and we just got along so well. I mean, so well.
Ed, question for Bobby.
Sure. The toughest goalie and the toughest defenseman that you played against.
Goalie, I don't think there's any goalies. I mean, goalies come and go. There's good goalies here or there. There's good goalies there or there. Like, what's the name of the one goalie that the Bruins had that was supposed to be the end all be all, and then we knocked him out of the playoffs? He never played again. I mean, the consistency for the goalie is you've got to play, you have to have 5 or 6 great years before you become a good goalie. And I remember that from Hicks's name. He was our GM in Washington, interim GM when Max McNabb got fired. Crow, Roger Crozier. So I'm in the office with him at the end of the year. We're talking about the season. And we had this young goalie come up, David Jensen. And I said he played great for 60 games. Really good. And I said, how about that David Jensen? He's doing awesome. And Crow's like, nah. Give me 5, 6 years. If he does it for 5, 6 years, he got my attention. He was gone the next year or 2 years later. And now I started to understand the goaltenders. I mean, everyone gets hot. The one that intrigues me the most about goaltending is Hasek. He had no system, no nothing. He's on his hands and knees. He's got no stick. And I can't believe he's successful as he is. But he must be one unbelievable, incredible athlete because that's the series that we had with New Jersey. We went to 7 games. And he's one that is the most intriguing for me, for sure. No question about that. But obviously, I had the chance to play with and coach with Marty Brodeur. He was, I mean, I see Patrick Waugh. I never played with him. I know him. I never will say one's better than the other. But Marty was a real true professional. He would be one of the first ones on the ice. He would stay after practice. He'd take another 50, 60 shots. He'd be one of the last ones off. Our kids are all the same age. So we went vacations with him and everything. It's just an extremely great guy. It was awesome to be able to play with him. So if I have to have a favorite, I would have to say, Marty's, to me, is my favorite. Defenseman, well, there's lots. Like I said, Scotty Stevens, I mentioned him before. He's probably has to be the top. Like I said, Ray's a close second. Really good. I didn't know him as well or as long. Al McGinnis is an incredible defenseman. Chris Chelios, who I played with forever, he's one of the best defensemen that, the longevity that he had, great attitude, really good person. Chris Pronger, I remember him playing at Hartford. He could hardly even skate. He looked like a newborn colt out there. And then he grows up and he ends up having the career that he had. He ended up turning out to be an awesome player. There's lots, but those would be some of the ones that jump out.
Bobby, I got to ask you about the transition from offensive guy to defensive guy. How did that start? What made you switch your style? And when you switched, everything was still working for you. What was it, a team thing, or was it a buying into a different system thing? Was it the New Jersey thing?
Nope. So what ended up happening there was we in 90, we ended up meeting Edmonton in the playoffs. We did not have a big centerman. We had Greg Janney that was small. I forget who the other two, they were small.
Randy Burrage.
He was a winger. I don't think he was a center. I'm trying to think of somebody else. I should know the answer to this because this is actually how it all started. So Mike Milbury calls me in the office and says, "Listen, you have to play against Bessier. Every single shift, you're the only guy that can play against him. You're the only one that has half decent size." And we played the finals. Messier didn't get 1 point. The kid line got it with Graves, Jelena, and who was the one from Detroit?
Not Peter Klima.
No, he got the goal. He was on the team, but he wasn't part of the kid line. But Messier never got a point. That was my job in the game. Mike's like, "We're not going to play in the power play late or this, but this is your, if we have a chance to win, we have to stop him," which we did. But they ended up winning. They did. They had a really good team. So the next year in the fall, so we win, we lose in the finals, we get there. That next year, that's when I hurt my knee and I missed the whole year. So things kind of slip, kind of slide, and people are like, "Well, he's not going to play. He's not going to do this, not going to do that." And Boston had made a mistake in the contract. I became a free agent. Washington wanted me back. Things didn't work out for Washington. So now I go to New Jersey and got Jacques Lemaire. And we start training camp. It was Jacques Lemaire's first year. Basically, it was Marty's first year, Larry Robinson's first year. So we were all new. And we go through it. And Jock sits down and says, "Listen, I need a check in center." So I went through a year and a half of wondering where I was going to be, goal scorer again or this. He goes, "I want you to do this." And I said, "Fine for me." I said, "I have no problem." And that's how it started. Jock LeMay was the one that did it. But Mike actually started it. Mike actually started it.
Was Dave Poulin one of those centers on that team?
No, he wasn't. He came later. So I don't know who the centers were in 90, but they weren't very big. I don't think David was there. No, I don't know who they were. That
Tom.
was a great year. That year we had won best penalty killing, best power play, goals against, goals for, and the President's Trophy. We won every other award except the Stanley Cup.
That was quite the series. I can remember getting in the infancy of ticket scalping. My father finagled some tickets, and we're sitting way up in the old Boston Garden, sweating our ass off for that game. But yeah, fond memories of that series and
So the
that.
semifinals, we ended up playing Washington, and this is how bad the game is. So it's not we ended up beating them in four, but I think it was the second game at home, and the players, everything. We talk about it. I still forget today, but we had four players that had just left Washington. It was me, Davey Christian, Gary Galley, and there was one more that Washington had got rid of. So you want to win. But like there was one, we won the first game pretty good. The second game was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the referees start calling some penalties. And all this as a player. And I said to Mike, I said, Mike, get me out there right in front on the power. Get me out there in front. I said, why? I said, you watch. So I ended up spearing Scotty Stevens, and he started beating me with a stick. He got a penalty, 5-on-3, and we scored again. But that's how you can manipulate the game if you know the stuff. And I remember seeing Scotty in the hall a couple of days later. He says, you're a real idiot. I'm like, sorry, I want to win too. But
Kind
I
of
knew
like
to
the
take a
Panthers.
penalty. I knew it'd take a penalty.
It's
That's how you
crazy how that
can.
momentum works like that, especially like I was just saying about how the Panthers play. They play an old school style. Like they just know how to manipulate. Tom, question for Bobby.
Is there a line mate that you've had throughout your career that you just naturally clicked with on the ice?
So, other than in Washington with Mike Gardner and that Gaetan Duchesne, that was probably the best line I played on that was consistent for a long time. So when I started to get older, even in like later Washington, but even in LA and especially in Boston, I became a player that would play with anybody and everywhere. So for instance, in Boston, we had a lot of injuries. Mike Bilbrey would come in and he'd say, okay, so and so is out for 2 weeks and he needed to play right wing. No problem. I'd play right wing. Then he'd say, okay, we need you to play left wing for these four games, or we need this, or we need that. I would play, I actually played defense a few games. We only got five defensemen. You got to go back there and play D. I could play anywhere. The only thing that I asked Mike was, I says, Mike, listen, if you have a feeling of you're going to move me, let me know. He says, what do you mean? I says, well, if I'm center and I go to wing, I said, it's easy. I said, but if I play 3 weeks at wing, now you want to move to center and I got to run around. I said, I got to do some conditioning work. I said, let me know because going from wing to center is hard. From center to wing is really easy. So I basically ended up playing everywhere. But I guess so with one playoff year that was really good too, I actually had played a number of games in that one playoff series of like three quarters of the season with Stéphane Richer and Claude Lemieux. It was really, really good. Those guys could do what they needed to do. I had stayed back like the Gaetan Duchesne did when I played in Washington. I had learned from him. So that was a really good line that was really good, but I didn't care who I played with or where I played.
Ed, question for Bobby.
I'd have to say, what was your favorite playoff series that you played in that you just you know about?
Playoff, what?
What playoff series was your favorite?
Series?
Yeah, just you know what team that you just went out there and you know that was just like a great it was a great series. Win or lose, it doesn't matter.
Well, if it was losing, it ain't great.
No,
I'm telling you that right
excellent point.
now.
Excellent point.
So one of the best ones ever, actually, I wasn't playing. I was coaching. It was incredible. Well, actually, there's two of them, the one I played in. So when I think we won the 1 year. So we came into Boston. Alex was born in 94, so it wasn't that one. We had lost to the Rangers. But when we came in, we drew Boston, we came in. No, we played at home. Boston came in and beat us twice at home. And we came back to Boston, and all the players were saying, oh, thank God we don't have to go back to New Jersey. It's a dump, it's a bad rig, this. And we beat them four straight. And it was that fast. The other one obviously was Detroit in the finals where we won 4-0 because nobody expected us to win. Nobody ever, let alone four straight. But the one that was really the most incredible one, Philadelphia had just got their new ring and we were down 3-1. We had to beat them twice in there and we ended up beating them in game five and game seven in their building. That was pretty great.
I gotta ask you, Bobby, the cup in 95, is that the apex milestone of the career? Or do you have
He being, yeah, I mean, but you know, it's interesting. It's just, it's so hard. It's such a long year. It's 8 weeks of every day, 2 months longer than everybody else is playing. I was at the age where I just wanted to go to bed. Like you see the people taking the picture. I just went home, went to bed. I'm like, I had enough. Like I'm done. It's a long. It's really, really long, grueling. The weight that you lose. You eat the same food all the time. You just can't wait to go get a pizza or a cheeseburger. It's a job. It's work. It's really work. It's discipline and work. It's hard.
Definitely the milestone, though, you would say.
You're in your backyard rink at 6 years old, dreaming about winning a Stanley Cup. So yeah, of course it is. You see it, you do that. Yeah, of course it is. But I think biggest thing that surprises me is that when I first started to play, all the people, the agents, everybody, okay, you got 10 years. You got to make the best of it. Every average is 4 years, but if you get 10, that's great. I mean, for me to be able to play 18 years and with all the playoff games, and like I played over 1,400 games, I think that's the biggest surprise for me.
Yeah. Tom, question for Bobby.
Yeah, what head coach do you think had the biggest impact on your career?
Jacques Lemaire was the best by a mile. I mean, he wasn't even close. He was so far advanced to everything. I had Mike Milbury was really good. I really enjoyed Mike. He liked me. He did a lot of things to players that I really would question. And I'm like, why would you do that? But Mike was a motivator, but he was really good to me. I loved him. He used me well. But so it's interesting when you talk about coaches and stuff. This is a funny story. So I'm in Washington. I told you about coaches that didn't like Americans at the time, whatever. So now I have Rick Green, Gary Green, my first coach. Great, was awesome. He gets fired, I don't know, 20 games in. So we get Brian Murray in. And Brian doesn't really care for me. Like, you're not Canadian. You don't know how to play. You don't know how to play defense. And this, well, rather than teach me, it was a negative thing from the beginning. And I'll give you an example. So I was very intelligent with the way I played. I was 100 and I, my first year, I was 100 and I left when I was like 186 pounds. And I came back at like 168. I mean, that's how much weight I lost over the year. You go from playing 14, 15 games to 80 games, boys to men. So I remember one game a couple of years after that, we were playing Philadelphia. We were doing pretty good. I had scored a big goal with like 8 minutes left in Philadelphia to give us a lead. We were playing for first place with Edmonton and Calgary, and I had scored a big goal to give us the lead. So now we're in front of the net, and there's 2 minutes left of the game. And the pocket comes out, and Tim Kerr, who is 240 pounds, and I'm 185, and he's ready to get the puck. I reach out to lift his stick up, and I just miss him, and he scores, ties the game 2-2. We go into the video room the next day, and Brian Murray's like, "You got to knock him on his ass. You got to cross-check him. You got to get him." I says, "Brian, he's 235." I said, "I'm 185. I am not knocking him on his ass. My only option is to get the puck and a stick. No, that's not how you play hockey." And I remember going home, going, "Holy shit! Like, what the fuck am I? What am I doing with this?" Right? Years and years and years later, Jacques Lemaire is there. We're doing a video session, and David Emma from BC, he's a little tiny kid. Mario Lemieux's out there, and David Emma's out there against him, and we're showing the video. He says, "David, you're cross-checking him on the back. You're not going to knock him down. Get the puck." I didn't realize I had a little smirk on my face, and I was kind of laughing because I was thinking of the story. This was the first year that Lemay was coach. It was only a couple of months in. So he calls me at the office, and he says to me, he says, you think that's funny? Like, you think that?" I said, "What are you talking about?" She says, "That you think that's funny?" I said, "No, I was thinking about this story." When I told him, I said, "Jock, I was thinking this when I was an 18-year-old. I said, I wish I had you as a coach now. Maybe I was 18." But when you know the game, you know the game. And there's a lot of coaches out there that don't know the game. They're motivators. They're this or they're that. They get jobs from their friends. But Like I said, Mike Milbury was a good coach to me. I liked the way he did things. Jock was, but he was the best by far. Not even close.
Ed, question for Bobby.
So, Bobby, since you played so long, take us through kind of an off-season conditioning kind of thing that you do. When we talked to Andre Lacroix, he talked back in when he played, he spoke about how they went to camp to get into condition. And what did you kind of do to get into condition before you went to camp?
Well, that you're right. So when we went to camp when I was younger, difference is from year one to year 18. Year one, you go to camp and you're there for 4 weeks, and you play an exhibition game in week three or four, and then or a couple. Then you go year 18. You went to camp for 2 days and you played again. So now you didn't go to camp to get in shape anymore. You had to stay in shape. So as the process went, I would always do some things. Early, you take some time off, but my goal was my birthday. I was July 13th. We had 6 weeks to training camp. It takes 6 weeks to get in shape, 6 weeks to get out of shape. So when my birthday came is when I buckled down. And I would start off working out 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And then when my birthday came, I did the 5 or 6 days a week, and I was dedicated till September come around. So it was perfect gauge for me. And you had enough time off at the beginning that you could enjoy it, but you had to get back to work.
We're just going to circle back, Bobby. I'm going to ask you a question about USA Hockey and being a kid that was part of USA Hockey growing up. What do you think of the growth now of USA Hockey?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's incredible what they've done. I mean, I don't, I never saw it from my point of view. I see it from the kids' point of view. Now that my kids are involved with USA Hockey, I never really had much to do with USA Hockey. So, like, I played 1 year of the junior team. So I remember one of the Art Berglund was one of the people for USA Hockey. He was a the world's guests that would go to every tournament. Yeah, we were in a van. I think it might have been the Hall of Fame when I got it with USA. And he was talking about a couple of people. He's like, he's a three-time world junior player. And he's a three-timer. And I said, ah, what good is that? What do you mean? I said, well, I only had a chance to play one because I went to the NHL. I wouldn't want to play 3 or 4 years for USA Hockey. Sorry. But the Canada Cups were awesome. I got to play in three of them. We had great coaches. The Canada Cups were incredible. I always went far in the playoffs, so I couldn't play in world championships. I think I played in one, and I was in LA. We didn't make the playoffs, so I went to Vienna. So I really didn't play much for USA Hockey because, like I said, world championships, I was gone. I was still in the playoffs. So I played one junior, three Canada Cups, and one world championships. I really didn't play that much, but the success that they're having is awesome. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just great.
Tom, we're going to have one more round of questions. So, last question for Bobby.
All right. Well, you won the cup in '95. Did you do anything fun with the cup? As you see, all you see in the last few days is the Panthers. I don't think some of those guys have been home yet.
So, like I said, I was older. I didn't do anything like that. I just so in Alex was born in 94, April. So we had a couple games left. So they had called me in the office and we'd be doing well. That was the first year. That's when we lost to the Rangers in the semifinals. And they said, listen, we got 2 games. You can go home if you want and see your wife. Because she didn't want to come live in New Jersey when she was pregnant. So she had lived in New Hampshire and I lived there. We would drive back and forth. And in so many words, they were like, we got to get ready for the playoffs. So I got the message. So we had her induced so she could have Alex so I could go back to work. And I would be able to see there without missing the playoffs. I just missed the last 2 games. So she was born April 13th. We started the playoffs, April, whatever. I didn't see her for 6 weeks because we were gone. We were down there. She would come. It's our first kid. Jude would come down for a game and then go home because we were in the hotel and everything like that. So that soon as that ended with the Rangers, I was gone. I went back home right away and did that. So now the year we won was a lockout year. So I spent the whole summer and fall and half the winter. But when I went again, they didn't come. They weren't going to come down because we didn't know what was going on and where we were staying and what we were doing. So we played and we had won. And then Jude had come down. And then the next day, we got in the car and drove back to go see my daughter because I hadn't really even seen her for a while. But we did have it up at the house. We had a lake house in New Hampshire. And it ended up, so I ended up getting, so you have it one or two nights, depending on where it was. I ended up, Lemaire called me and asked me, he says, "Listen, do you want to have it for an extra 2 days?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course, I'd love to." I said, "What happened?" There was this assistant coach that we had that lived in Berlin, New Hampshire, and he had, I don't know, death in the family, a wedding or something, and he couldn't take it. So rather than move it somewhere else, I said, "Well, let's just keep it there." Well, I'll tell you what, after the fourth day, get rid of it. Get it out of here. People would show up at the house, knocking at the door. The word got around, and I'm like, this, the first couple of days are great. But after that, I'm like, I don't want it. I don't want to get out of here. Then the second one, we ended up inviting all the people we forgot. You didn't invite me. You didn't invite me. Okay. So that one became an enormous pot. Again, we only had it the 2 days. The third one, I'm like, we're not doing this again. My wife's like, we're not having all these people over. We're not doing it. So what we did was, which was awesome, the kids were, so it was 90, 2003. So Alex was 9, 7, and 6. So what we did was we had a pretty good sized house up there at the lake. We had another family that we were close with. We didn't tell anybody it was coming. We invited all the kids to come up, and the kids had it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was good.
Ed, final question for Bobby.
Sure. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit from you, and I'm gonna take you out of hockey and I'm gonna take you to the marathon. So just tell us about your marathon experience in 2016.
So I did it four times.
Okay.
Which one are you talking about?
Well, I mean, just take us through what the one where you did, I think, with Deanna, I think.
Okay, so the year before, I don't know what happened, but I wasn't going to be involved in hockey for that year. And I'm looking for something to do. And I never ran more than 5 miles. I'm saying, maybe I, so what ended up happening is I got really, really, really out of shape when that happened before. You don't know anything. And so we had doctors every day, every day, every day, every day. And then when you retire, you don't think you have to go to the doctor, or I do. So one day my wife's like, "Get to go to the doctor." She's like, "You made an appointment. You're getting heavy. You don't look good. You got to go." I'm like, "Okay." So I go, and he don't know this doctor because we always had team doctors. And they do the blood pressure, they do everything, and he comes back in. And he sits at the desk and he starts writing out all these prescriptions. And I'm just looking at him like, "What are you doing?" I never met this doctor before. I still have him today, and we still laugh about it. Oh, he says, "Like, we gotta get on all this medicine, all this." And I'm like, "No." I said, "I get the message. Don't throw him in the trash." No, you have to." I said, "Don't worry about it." He says, "I want you to come back in 3 months." He says, "If you're not 20 pounds lighter," he says, "you gotta do this." I says, "I agree." He says, "I'm gonna write you one prescription." I said, "Okay." I said, "What's that for?" He says, "A health club." I said, "I don't need that either." "What do you mean?" I said, "I got a garage with every single machine over there." I said, "Every morning my wife goes over to the garage." I said, "I go to Dunkin' Donuts." I says, "No, I don't need that." I got the message. So then I started to get back into shape. And we lived in North Reading. So we have that Quantapowhat Pond. My wife's a health fanatic. So she would walk that, 3 times, 9 miles, 6 miles. So I started to walk and feel better, feel better, feel better. And then one day I said, "I'm going to go run one lap, which is 3 miles, and come half hour later, and then we'll walk another one." And then I kept running a little more, a little more, a little more. And then one day it was so nice. I ran, I ran, I ran, I ran. I had a Fitbit on, and the Fitbit starts buzzing and everything I look at, it says, congratulations, you ran a half mile. I mean, a half marathon. And I'm like, holy shit, 13 and a half miles. I said, I might be able to do a marathon. So I started to think. So one of the best runners in Peabody history was a guy by the name of Fernando Braz, who went to BC, ran in the Olympics, and we were junior high friends. So I said, listen, I said, let's have breakfast. He said, okay. So we have breakfast. He said, what do you want? I said, you're 52 years old. I said, can I run a marathon? I said, yeah, of course you can. I said, but listen, I don't want to run it in 5 or 6 hours. I said, I want to break 4. I said, I want it 3. He says, yeah, it's going to take a while. I said, what do you mean? He goes, 8 months. I'm going to send you a program every Sunday and you do it. So I tell everybody I'm going to do it. They're like, there's no way at 52 you can run it under 4 hours. There's no way. I ran over 750 miles in 8 months. I did it in 3 and a half. So, which was incredible. I never thought I could do it.
Badass.
Never thought I could do it. So that year, I was so impressed with different people that ran the marathon. I had blind people with guides that were running by me. I'm like, that's freaking unbelievable. I can't believe a blind person can run like that. So the sponsor, the lady that does the charity work, Susan Hurley, Susan Hurley lives across. She says, well, what do you want to do next year? I said, I don't know. I said, I don't want to train to beat 3 and a half hours. I said, I want to do something different. I want to run with a veteran or run with a blind person or this or this or this. And she says, yeah, we can do that. And then she brings up Dennis' name. She doesn't know that we have a relationship. And I said, would you be willing to push a wheelchair? I said, yeah. And she says, well, this one girl, I'm not sure she's ready for it, Dana Lang. I said, I grew up with the father. I said, I would love to ask her to do it. So that's how that one happened. So then we did it. We actually did it at 4:15, which was pretty good. Then I took the next year off. I had a shoulder surgery. Then I did it two more times. My son wants to do it. I did it with my youngest son. My oldest son wants to do it when he gets done playing. So I got one more left, but I'll do five. I want to do five.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. Bobby, I got to ask you one final question before we let you go. What one word sums up your playing career?
I don't know. One word. I guess tenacious. I never stopped and never quit, just kept going and going. We, like I said, that year I hurt my knee. I was retired for 4 days. They said they couldn't fix it. And then I played 9 years after that. You go from a goal scorer to a checker or this. I just always believed I was going to play. I never would believe I wasn't going to play.
So before we wrap it up and let you go, I just want to ask you if people want to contact you or write for autographs or write to say hi or big fans out there, how can they
Oh, they've
contact
already called me. Don't worry about that. They can find me.
you?
Trust me. Every day I go to the mailroom, I gotta sign 1 to 5 envelopes of cards. They know where
Okay. All
I
right. Well, it definitely it from all of us. Finally having you on and talking USA Hockey and talking about the career and talking about the Stanley Cups and just everything. I'm so happy that we finally got you on. And
was great. It was awesome.
I just want to say thanks and
Thank you.
we'll definitely talk soon and hopefully I'll give you a big hug when I see you.
Great questions, guys, too. Those are all the ones that people always ask. That was awesome.
Yeah, th thanks. Thanks
Thanks.
so
Thanks for
much,
your time,
Bobby.
Bobby. Really
Thank
appreciate it.
you.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Have a
Okay,
good night.
we'll
Thank
see
you.
you. All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. So, what do you think?
I thought it was great.
Good. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. We do well. We do well with the questions. I just never want to, even though the production is in high end, I just don't want to seem too unprepared. Or I don't want to seem like we're not enjoying our time with them. So I told Tom the next one that we got scheduled is Bill Clement on the 29th. But if I, there's two other people that are interested that I'd like to just tile that stuff up and free up whoever we got next. So whenever I can fit them in, I'll let you guys know, confirm before I do anything.
Yeah,
All right.
sounds good. Yeah, that
Sounds
was
good.
good. He was, man, he was really smooth and polished. He did it.
Yeah.
He did a really great job, and
Yeah.
it was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
All right.
great.
Looks like
Well,
he could play. He looks like he's in good shape.
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he reminds me of Scott Pepin.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Scott.